Microphone check, 1, 2. Testing, microphone check. Microphone check.
Mic check.
Good morning. Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Microphone check, 1, 2. Testifier mic 1. Testifier mic 2.
Go ahead and call this meeting of the House Special Committee on Arctic Policy, Economic Development, and Tourism to order. Let the record reflect that it is 11:35 a.m. on Thursday, March 29, 2018. Members present are Rep. Josephson, Rep. Tuck, myself, Representative Lincoln, and Representative Edgman. We have a quorum to conduct business, and I'd ask everyone in the room to please silence your cell phones. And I'd also like to thank Committee Secretary Brian Glynn and Eileen Keim from the Juneau LIO for being with us to transcribe the meeting and record our meeting. Committee aide Raven Nostein is also here to help with any committee needs. On the agenda today, we have a confirmation hearing for Commissioner Designee Mike Navarre, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, after which we will continue our discussion on House Bill 383. We'll begin with a confirmation hearing, and if Mike, if you'd please step forward and place yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Mike Navarre. I'm the Commissioner Designee for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. I'm happy to answer committee members' questions. I can provide a little bit of background on, I guess, some of my qualifications in history. I have a fairly diverse background in government. I actually have a degree in government. I checked to make sure it was a Bachelor of Arts degree. So it's a BA in government, not a BS in government. I spent 12 years in the Alaska legislature. I spent 9 years in three separate terms as mayor of the Kenai Peninsula Borough. So I have a legislative background, administrative background in government, and an educational background. Also have a fairly diverse business background in that we, my family company, which I am the head of, the president of, owns and operates Arby's restaurants in Alaska. We've had that distinction since 1980 is when we opened our first store. We also had at one point, I think, 9 Radio Shack stores around the state of Alaska. All of those have been closed, and that was not as a result necessarily of our operations, but Radio Shack at the national level really didn't evolve to meet sort of the changing atmosphere in terms of retail electronics. Online sales has just completely cannibalized most retail outlets. So I joined the governor's administration at his invitation, in large part because I have a growing concern about Alaska's economy and whether or not we're prepared to take advantage of all the opportunities that we have in Alaska as a result of our vast natural resources. Where we're sited geographically on the world stage in terms of access to mostly Asian markets, and the fact that our economic foundation in Alaska has been flawed for a long time. We've heard a lot of talk about the disconnect in Alaska between our revenues and our economy, and it's one of the things that I have been speaking about for a long time, dating back to when I was actually in the legislature almost 30 years ago, the need for a long-range fiscal plan. We still need it. We need to balance our revenues with our expenditures on an annual basis, and that's one of the things that the governor asked me to do and something that I have a passion for and intend to continue working on. With that, I'm happy to answer committee members' questions.
Thank you. I'd like the record to reflect that Rep. Talarico joined us at 11:37. Representative Edgman?
Yes, Mr. Navarre, I just want to put on the record that I've known you a long time. I think it was back in the 90s when you first elbowed me on the basketball court. I think former Representative Mackey might have been shooting the ball once again. So I've known you since your days as a legislator, and I know that your job in the legislature, you were widely lauded as somebody who was pretty practical and willing to work with sort of both sides of the aisle and be more of a problem solver. And the times back then were also pretty tough, as they are today. But if I could throw a question your way, it would be for you to maybe talk a little bit about the department itself and how big and diverse and varied it really is, everything from seafood marketing to regulatory, licensing, local government, economic, energy, all, you know, sort of different dimensions put together in one department, but maybe give you the opportunity to speak a little bit to the department itself, its mission, and why you think that going forward, essentially it's in good hands. I give you a softball.
Thank you, Representative Hageman, through the chair. Yeah, it is a huge department, the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. It actually is a combined department, as you are, I'm sure, aware. The Department of Community and Regional Affairs, it used to be department level. It was combined with the Department of Commerce, I think, about 10 years ago now. And so it's actually two departments have been combined into one. It's has a lot of different aspects to it, including insurance, regulation of insurance and oversight of insurance in the state, banking and securities, professional licensing, and all aspects of our economy, from barbers and hairdressers to morticians. We both doctors, nurses. And in that regard, I want to mention one thing that we're working on in the department. One of the things is the time it takes to get licenses processed through the system. We started initially with a demonstration project in the medical and nursing professional licensing, where we're doing more online. We've already narrowed the time frame for processing those fairly significantly. And if we're successful, which I think that we will be, we intend to apply it across as many of the lines in professional licensing in order to shorten the time frame that it takes for people to get their licenses, because we recognize that it's really important to their jobs and their livelihood. Also, it deals with, which is one of the departments that areas that's described in the Constitution, community and regional affairs. Very important. We have a lot of communities around the state with different levels of sophistication in terms of their administration of their communities, and whether they're municipalities or villages. And so what that division does, and it's one of the areas that is mostly, in fact, it's almost all general funds and grant funds, one of the things that that division does is go out to the communities and help them in some of their accounting, some of their bookkeeping, in order maintenance of their facilities, whether it's water facilities or sewage facilities, or in terms of their fuel tanks and barge facilities. So it's something that is vitally important, because a lot of the small communities simply do not have the resources in order to have full-time personnel to do some of those things. And so that's a very important aspect of what my department does also. Economic development is a division that is incredibly important. It's also an area that is largely general funded. But it's really important in that we have a lot of revolving loan funds, fishing revolving loan funds, economic development revolving loan funds, and a number that the legislature has put in place in order to try to help generate economic activity around the state. And it's incredibly valuable in the short term and long term well-being of Alaska's overall economy. So it's broad, diverse department. There are a lot of good people who work in the department. My job as commissioner is to allow them to do their job and work with them on areas that they either ask for assistance or we identify as a team ways that we can make improvements. And one of the things that I've talked to our different division directors about, and certainly within the department, is that regulation and customer service are not mutually exclusive. And so making sure that when we interact with people, we recognize that it's the most important thing that they're dealing with. And while we have a lot of other responsibilities and applications that we're processing to make sure that we do the best job we can at getting back to people quickly, addressing what their concerns are, and at the same time meeting our responsibilities for regulation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? I have a couple of questions for you. What would you describe as the best opportunity for the state in terms of economic development that's not oil and gas related?
I think, Mr. Chairman, I believe that the most the best opportunities are, other than oil and gas, are mining. We have tremendous world-class mining deposits around the state. And it's one of the areas that I think we will see continued growth, obviously making sure that we can get energy to those projects is something that is critical to the cost and the economics of those types of projects. I also think that we have vast fisheries resources, and we're continuing to explore the markets around the world. Our ASME does an excellent job worldwide in promoting and delivering on both quality and seafood product. And the other thing that we have is tourism. Tourism is a huge growth market for Alaska, largely because of our natural beauty, and we're seeing some growth on the shoulder seasons in the wintertime because of the Northern Lights. We're seeing increased activity with regard to visitors during the wintertime, and certainly our summertime, the beauty of Alaska attracts people from all over the world, including the cruise industry, which we're seeing expansion of, and expectation that we'll see again increased visitorship in that area.
Thank you. And another question, listeners, a question from Mike. So coming from Northwest Alaska, implementation of ANCSA is something that's really important to us and people all over the state, and the department has some responsibility for that in terms of managing the municipal land trust. And I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts on how the department may work better with communities that are not incorporated and where the state holds a lot of land that I think is intended to be controlled and in the hands of specific local communities and now is being held in trust by the state. Do you have any thoughts or plans to share on that topic?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, we have discussed that issue and have started working on a strategy about how we get the municipal land trust lands out into communities, recognizing that some of the areas where municipal land trust lands have been reserved, communities, municipalities will never form there. And so making sure that the entities, whether they're villages or tribal entities, we can get the land out into those areas and out of municipal land trusts. And I think that's a reality of in recognizing that there won't be municipalities formed in many of those communities, in large part because there aren't real significant economies in those communities, nor are there the population masses to support that.
Any other questions? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for being here, Mike. Good to see you. Should Alaska have a state bank?
Do we have a state bank?
Should we have a state bank? I know we have a marijuana industry. I know that oftentimes Alaska wants to control its own destiny. We're having a fiscal crisis right now. Should we be looking at maybe coming up with monetary policies to help us with our fiscal situation?
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Tuck. Yes, I think that we do. We have the ability to charter state banks. We've had some inquiries with respect to the growing marijuana industry and the issues associated with that, with respect to sort of the federal conflicts with state laws and how we address that. And so our Division of Banking is exploring that with people who have expressed interest about how we might go about addressing that situation within the state and recognizing that there may be some conflicts, but state statutes versus federal law.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I'll throw another one out there.
Okay. Senator Tuck?
So, you know, we're trying to maximize the use of our resources here throughout the state of Alaska. And we mentioned tourism industry, some mineral development and oil industry, roughly. Where's our opportunities, or is there any opportunities still in the timber industry?
In what?
Timber.
You know, Representative Tuck, through the chair, I think there are opportunities in timber throughout the state. Obviously, it depends on what the world timber markets are, demand for timber, certainly in the southeast area where this current federal administration has, and with the support, I think, of the governor, has looked at the roadless rule in southeast Alaska so that there can be some access to the timber resources within Tongass and the ability to, on a limited basis, see if there's economic opportunities as a result of that access. So that's a big part of it is access. Mr. Chairman, you know, I do want to, if I could briefly, talk about economic opportunities in Alaska, timber, even agriculture, mining, oil and gas, tourism. All of those are critically important. In order to position ourselves as a state, in order to take advantage of them. If you look at what has happened, and I know that all of you are familiar with the decline curve for oil and gas. We're at a quarter of the production we were 20 years ago. What that means is that at one time when Alaska could utilize oil and gas revenues to pay the costs of our entire economy, that's no longer the case. Our economy has diversified significantly. Other areas have grown in terms of their gross domestic product in Alaska far more significantly than oil and gas. And what that means is that absent some sort of a broad-based tax in Alaska, we are likely to not be well positioned to take advantage of the opportunities that our vast natural resources provide to us. And we can debate the terms, and I know that you have in detail, how we spread the tax burden. But the reality is that we have to spread the tax burden a little bit further in order to build an economic foundation for Alaska that will allow us to take advantage of the vast opportunities that we have. And I think that's one of the areas that it's not a party issue. It doesn't belong to the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, or even independents. Everybody agrees that we want a strong economy in Alaska, and we want the ability to take advantage of the economic opportunities that are available to us. And in order to do that, we have to come to some agreement on the foundation that we put in place in a lot that will allow us to do that. And I've been making presentations with respect to exactly that and intend to continue doing so.
Rashford?
I think it's not me. I think it's defective.
Rep. Josephson?
Mr. Chair, my lack of questions is just a reflection of the fact that Commissioner Navarre is as well suited for this position as anyone I've seen. His background is impeccable. He's experienced everything there is to experience in local and state government, and he's a great asset, and he was a great choice. So I just don't, I could talk to Commissioner Navarre all day, but I'm confident that he's going to continue to do a good job.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the committee?
Yeah, I'll just... thank you, Mr. Chair. Basically, say about the same thing. I'm trying to think of what kind of questions that we can reveal his heart, but his heart is always out there. He does have a heart for Alaska. He does have a good vision for Alaska, and I too can't think of a better person for this position with the experience that he has, with the knowledge that he has, and his ability to navigate through a web of obstacles. And so I believe that we're in good hands, and look forward to working with him.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, thank you. So what that means is that in the current times, he's the perfect guy for the job. I'll join my voices with the previous two speakers.
He is a strong advocate in the District 40 office as well. So if there's no other question or comment, then we'll go ahead and forward Mr. Navarre's name to a joint session for further consideration. And none of you need reminding of the fact that signing the report doesn't indicate that you intend to vote for Mr. Navarre or not, but we'll go ahead and take a brief at ease to sign the document. Okay, call the meeting back to order. Before us now is House Bill 383, version 30-LS1214/0. We have the bill sponsor, Representative Grant, and his staff, Brooke Ivey, here in the room to present a committee substitute for our consideration. It's my intent that we adopt the CS as a working document for discussion, and I'd like to invite them to the table to describe the changes from with the CS from the previous version. Please put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Representative Jason Gren, proudly serving District 22 in Anchorage, Alaska.
Brooke Ivey, for the record, staff to Representative Jason Gren.
Brief Eddies. Got a little ahead of myself, maybe. I think a motion would be in order to adopt the committee substitute.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the committee substitute for House Bill 383, version 30-LS1214/R as a committee working draft.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, we now have the committee substitute before us, and I'd invite an introduction of the changes from testifiers.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I have my staffer walk through the changes, just wanted to express appreciation for the work that this committee has done on the bill. Obviously, this is a complex bill, lots of moving parts, and in many ways a new innovative idea that's come before our legislature. So there's lots of conversations that I've had. We've had opportunity to meet with my office has met with your staff to go through changes and walk through some of those as they are detailed and complex. So thank you for the work that this committee has been able to do to really clean up and make it a better bill. We understand and acknowledge more work needs to be done and conversations with stakeholders and industry and people within the building, and believe that through that process and being able to talk with the next committee referral, the finance committee, where this bill really has come forward to several years ago, where the intent language was to ask this industry to move on and to provide funds from themselves. Where that intent language has come from is the finance department or the finance committee. So to be able to work with them, continuing the conversation, would be needed and appreciated. I think with that, I'll ask with the chair's indulgence to walk through the changes in the CS.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record again, Brooke Ivey, staff to Representative Jason Gren. So I'll now walk members through the changes from version O to R of House Bill 383. So throughout the bill, there were a number of conforming changes and legislative legals drafting cleanup changes. And so we've, so for example, the term Department of Revenue has been changed to Department. Throughout the bill, the terms tourism segment and business segment were used interchangeably. They've abbreviated that down to segment for clarity. And again, just as a reminder for members, a segment is in reference to a sector of the tourism industry that provides the same goods as services. So, for example, tour operators would potentially be a segment. So additional changes were adopted throughout the bill as recommended by legislative legal. And we actually have a separate detailed document for those members who want to see every small change. We have that as well and available upon request, but for now we'll just walk through the substantial changes. So page 1, line 1, amends the bill title to include reference to a vehicle rental tax credit. Page 1, lines 5 through 12, deleted section 1 through 4 of the previous version and replaced it with a new section 1. This is all in reference to the vehicle rental tax mechanism. So as you may recall, in the previous version, sections 1 through 4 allowed a mechanism where an entity that was subject to the vehicle rental tax could say they would like all or a portion of the tax they were remitting to the Department of Revenue to be deposited into the Tourism Marketing Fund, which is established in the bill. That was creating some issues for the Department of Revenue. There was no precedent in statute for that type of mechanism. Legislative legal also shared concerns that could trigger some federal tax code issues for those entities. And so rather than to clean that up, we look to a vehicle rental tax credit mechanism that's common, similar to the education tax credit and other tax credits that exist in Alaska statute. So that's what is now covered in Section 1. Effectively, an entity subject to the vehicle rental tax could choose to donate to the Tourism Marketing Fund established in the bill and apply for a credit against their vehicle rental tax liability. Page 2, lines 25 through 26, added new language, the simply permitting the Travel Alaska Board to remove ex officio non-voting members. Previously, they could only elect them, but this also allows them to remove them. Page 2, lines 28 through 29, in 4425205D listed several things that non-voting members are board actions that non-voting members are not counted for, and this simply allows adds to that list electing a chair or vice chair. Page 3, lines 1 through 6 added a new subsection 4425205F. This clarifies that if for any reason the assessment was terminated, the Travel Alaska Board could remain active through June 30th of the following year. This was to resolve an issue because the Travel Alaska Board is made up of payers, so if there is no assessment, if that's terminated, it would effectively mean the board would terminate. This will allow them to exist through June 30th of the following year to expend the remaining funds and fulfill the remaining marketing plan. An additional assessment could also be proposed during that time.
Page 9, lines 14 through 30, adds a new subsection, 4425270C. This essentially was clarifying board member elections. In the bill, we have both, we reference both board member elections and assessment election, voting on an assessment. Sometimes those occur on the same ballot. Sometimes board members, if there was an expiration of term, you would only be voting on renewing those board seats. So this helped to clarify what notice requirements are necessary, are required for board member elections, and who would be voting on those in those two scenarios, if they were voting on an assessment in addition to board members or just voting on board members. Page 9, lines 22 through 27, adds a new subsection, 4425270D. So this was in the original, this was the intent of the original version of the bill, but needed to be clarified better in the language that on an election ballot, when they're voting on an assessment, it will list assessments for all segments and be voted on as a block, an up or down vote. So there's a single assessment vote. If an assessment were to pass, there's three scenarios where it might be an election would happen in relation to that assessment, either to reauthorize, because in the bill, an assessment would terminate automatically after 6 years. So in 6 years, they would have potentially a reauthorization vote. If they vote to reauthorize and that vote passes, and that vote fails, the assessment would terminate. It would not reauthorize. If they had an election to amend the assessment and the vote to change the assessment fails, the original assessment would remain intact. If there was a vote to terminate an assessment and that vote passed, then the assessment would terminate. So it's simply sort of clarifying those different scenarios.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So let me make sure I get this correct. So if assessment passes, it's good for 6 years. If prior to the 6 years they amend it, then that's good for another 6 years?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, that actually is not clarified in the bill. So I would have to find out how that normally functions in a tourism improvement district model, but I believe Emily Nauman with Legislative Legal is on the phone. She might be able to speak to that. My understanding is that's not necessarily clarified in the bill, but I may defer to her on that.
Okay, and then if I may, Mr. Chair. However, if the bill sunsets automatically, then they have to do an all-new reassessment. Am I hearing that correctly?
Representative Tuck, through the chair. So currently in the draft of the bill, the assessment, any assessment that passes would automatically terminate in 6 years, or if they had identified an earlier date on that original ballot, it would terminate whichever was sooner. So if the industry wanted that assessment to continue, yes, they would need to have a reauthorization of that assessment, at which time they could also change the, make adjustments to the assessment, but they would need to vote on that.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And please let their record show that Representative Newman joined us at 12:08 p.m. And just so the committee knows, we do have some people available to answer questions. Ken Alper, he's back in the room. Emily Nauman with Ledge Legal, John Lambeth with the Civitas Advisors, who testified on this bill before, and Sarah Leonard and Colleen Stevens with ATIA are also on the phone to answer questions. If you want to proceed, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So next is page 10, line 18. This amended the vote threshold from at least, it previously said at least 50% to more than 50% of the weighted votes received in election. This was just to add clarity that any vote, whether to approve an assessment, terminate an assessment, or change an assessment, would need more than 50% of the weighted votes. Page 10, line 24, inserts language in 4425275, which is the weighted votes section of the bill, to ensure that the weight of a tourism business's vote would remain confidential. This was a recommendation by the Department of Revenue, knowing that gross revenue information for a business should remain confidential, and if the weighted vote, the weighted votes could essentially allow someone to interpret what a gross business's gross revenue was. So it's important for those to remain confidential. Page 10, so the next two changes on page 10, lines 25 through 28, and then page 11, lines 1 through 3, this addresses Department of Revenue's ability to require a tourism business to provide that gross revenue information, mainly in the, especially in the first round, so that they can, for the purposes of weighting a vote. It gives, strengthens the Department of Revenue's authority to request that information. It also allows the Department of Revenue to adopt a procedure for a adopt a method for weighting votes should a tourism business, for whatever reason, not provide their gross revenue information to ensure that they could still participate in the vote. It would allow the department to work out a way to address what that weight would be.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tuck.
Okay, and in this instance, we're talking about the first vote, right? The first is this the qualification, or is this the vote for the self-assessment?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, if I I hope I'll answer your question. Essentially, this is any time. So for the first assessment, there will be more work that needs to be done to acquire gross revenue information for the weighting of a vote. But any time there are new businesses that pop up or a new segment perhaps is included in a new assessment vote, there may be new businesses they need to reach out to acquire gross revenue information to estimate what they would pay in the following year and weight the vote. So, but if it would only be the first year, yes, for a business to need to provide that up front for the estimation. After that, they would look to what was paid in a previous calendar year for weighting a vote.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Grant, I'd like to learn more information about how the department would require the tourism business to provide information necessary to weigh their vote for an election. Trying to envision in my mind how you see this, how do you see this, the structure of this? What would they be asking businesses?
Okay. Representative Newman, through the chair, you know, in our conversations with the department, who is present here if you need to speak with them for details, my understanding is, you know, they have a method by which they reach out to businesses to establish a taxpayer relationship. So it would be the department reaching out to those, identifying and reaching out to those individual businesses to request that information, whether that, I would assume that would be in writing, but I would not like to assume beyond that.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Excuse me, but it would probably have to be in writing, obviously. Mr. Chair, here, what I'm seeing is a lot of the information, and we're asking to get into confidential business information here, how much people are making, where they're making it, and how they're making it, so that they can weigh that in assessment on a taxation. That's getting into some pretty, what I would call confidential privilege information to these businesses. And we're looking at passing a bill here without even knowing what that structure is or something, I think would be probably important information. I mean, I support our tourism market and trying to get stuff into there, but I certainly think that we need to have something that's ready to go when we go out there. But we asked for, you know, what information. This is pretty critical information. I know it's a big issue whenever we've had a lot of these funding things. So, Mr. Chair, I don't know how you want to address that issue, but I think it should be addressed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If I may, Mr. Chair.
Rep. Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my understanding is the Department of Revenue would have that information. I think that the Department of Revenue determines the weight of the business on how many votes that they would have. I guess the only question I have on that is do we know how that weight is going to be defined, or is that still yet to be determined?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, the weight would be determined by the, so in the the first time a business is involved in an assessment election, it would be based on their estimated payment in the following calendar year based on their gross revenues and what the assessment rate is proposed to be. Following that, it would be what was actually paid, the actuals that were paid in the previous calendar year once they participated.
If I may, Mr. Chair. And so does that mean it's dollar for dollar? Is it, you know, a range, you know, 0 to 10,000? Is it, you know, you get one vote? Or is it a gradual increase, stair-step increase? I mean, how is that, has that been determined yet?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, that's not determined to that level of specificity in the bill. Okay. I would say John Lambeth with Civitas is also on the line, who's dealt with a lot of tourism improvement district models throughout the country, so he may have input on that, but I'm not sure that it's done the same across the board.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Representative Newman?
Yeah, just to follow up on that, Mr. Chair, and so I'm trying to envision this in my mind. And so if I'm renting bicycles down here in Juneau, is a tourism industry, and so I think what I'm hearing, and because of prior testimony and structures of what they're doing, we're going to have a board figure out how much money that company makes, and they're going to have to report that. I don't know if what standard allowable expenditures they get, if it's their gross or net. We don't even know that. Is this board going to set up a tax that's 0.2 or 0.1, or because it's that type of industry, does it get treated different than somebody in industry that's in the cruise industry? You know, we heard that there would probably be different taxations for different what type of company you are. And I haven't seen any of that stuff. I think that should be worked out, Mr. Chair. Okay.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Any other questions or comments at this time?
Well, it might be for we'll go through the rest of the sections analysis here, but eventually I would like to have the question answered on what if somebody refuses to report, what happens then? Is there a penalty or what happens then?
Okay, please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, I have some potential. I could potentially answer that question, or would you like me to proceed through the explanation of questions?
Go ahead and answer the question.
Okay. Thank you. So, Representative Tuck, through the chair. This is a concern the Department of Revenue has certainly raised. My understanding is they do not have the authority to require information until an assessment were to be in place. So they could require that assessment be paid. And they would have dominion over that. However, prior to an assessment being in place, they don't have authority to force, as far as I'm aware, a business to provide that gross revenue information, and that is why we've amended language into the bill to ensure that they have the authority to come up with a method to address when that doesn't happen, when they don't have access to that information. How do they wait a vote to make sure that that business can still participate in the vote? So that would be an internal department discussion at this point. I also wanted just to note for members that 4425260 in the bill does address the confidentiality requirements around and public record requirements related to the information collected by the Department of Revenue in the bill. So moving on. Page 11, lines 17 through 21, amends 4425295, which is the subsection of the bill establishing the Alaska Tourism Marketing Fund. The changes made here were to ensure the legislature was not both appropriating into the fund and out of the fund, which in the previous draft was happening. And so legislative legal suggested we needed to clarify and fix that. So this now clarifies the Department of Revenue will deposit collected assessment revenue and donations into the fund, and then the legislature would appropriate out of the fund in the form of a grant potentially to the Alaska Travel Industry Association, as the legislature currently does. Page 11, lines 22 through 24, this adds language making sure that the Alaska Tourism marketing fund. Funds can be appropriated out of that fund to cover the cost of administering the program. So we do know there is a fiscal note from the Department of Revenue that would create some administrative and upfront capital costs to administer this program. This ensures that revenue assessments could be used to cover those costs. Page 11, line 30 through page 12, line 3, adds definitions for department, fund, and gross revenue. Page 12, lines 10 through 27, this change amended section 3A through C of the bill, which is the transitional language. It's uncodified language in the bill, to ensure that a governor-appointed transition board is established before any Travel Alaska Board member or assessment election takes place. So under this structure, the leading statewide nonprofit tourism marketing association, which is essentially ATIA, as referred to in the bill, would forward a list of names to the governor for an appointment of a transition board. And at that point, the transition board would hold the first election for an assessment and the board members for the Travel Alaska Board, which would then continue on. Once the Travel Alaska Board was appointed, the transition board would dissolve. So this was at the recommendation of legislative legal to ensure the entity working with the Department of Revenue to define the segments and hold that initial election was governor appointed and not just an industry association separate from government oversight. Page 12, line 28 through page 13, line 6, amends section 3D and 3E and deletes previous section 3F. So this adds clarifying language that the Director of Elections and the Department of Revenue are also involved in the first assessment election that had been omitted in one of the drafts. So we just put that back in, that they are obviously involved in helping with the procedures of that first election process, just as they would be in all future elections. This also removed the ratification of the first approved assessment by the Travel Alaska Board, as that was no longer required, as the payers would be voting on that first approval of that assessment. It did not need to be ratified by the Travel Alaska Board. Finally, this section also clarifies that the transition board dissolves upon appointment of the Travel Alaska Board, as previously mentioned. So just a lot of cleanup of the sequencing of events in the bill. And that concludes the explanation of changes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Ivey. Any questions or comment from the Representative Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had questions on the credit here in Section 1 and how we envision that. So where does this credit come from? And it says they're allowed to credit as these credits against corporate taxes against state. Are these backfilled by UGF funds into this? Can you explain that?
Representative.
Renewable credits. I mean, there's lots of different credits.
Representative Newman, through the chair, my understanding is this would function very similar to the education tax credit. So an entity subject to the vehicle rental tax could donate funds to the tourism or Alaska Tourism Marketing Fund as established in the bill and then apply for a credit against their tax liability for the vehicle rental tax once upon remitting that tax.
Follow up.
So then again, that would be backfilled by UGF dollars?
Representative Newman, through the chair, yes, anything that I suppose it year to year, the appropriations depend on how the legislature is appropriating those funds. But if there had been plans to appropriate them towards something other than tourism marketing, then yes, I would assume that would be backfilled by UGF.
Follow up.
Mr. Chair, that's where we were at when we started this discussion right now, you know, with parks, doesn't have the money with parks with 4.3 and the tax on here and the ferries, you know, when we have additional people into the ferries. And that's, you know, the first thought was to, well, we'll just take the vehicle rental tax that's already paying for these things for government, you know, that would be have to be supplemented with UGF dollars at the same time. And that was the whole goal, is when we asked ATIA to, we said we can't, the state doesn't have the ability to continue to give money away like this. And we know it's a very important industry. So we did the same thing with fisheries, you know, with ASME, Alaska Seafood, excuse me, the acronyms. Mr. Speaker, what I'm seeing here is now we have an unused credit similar to the education tax credit. I'm very familiar with it. I've created that. To where, again, it's another independent expenditure by the state of Alaska where corporate credits, I don't know if they're transferable credits or not, we haven't heard that, where other companies could maybe buy them to make them so that they're more value, what interest is paid on them, how they're worked out. I guess we're just going to get a credit to the company after looking at their information, but we don't know what they're going to ask them to get that information, or how they're going to get it, or what they can deduct against their net profits. And a tax that we don't know about to come up with this money that's going to have to get backfilled, I think, by general fund dollars. There's a lot of questions here that I'd like to answer and help find the answers for. But if we could fill it in, Representative Grin, I'd certainly be glad to hear some answers.
Representative Grin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Newman, I think a lot of those questions that you've brought up are valid and need answering. And I think you know, a lot of that focus, like we mentioned earlier, you know, where the intent of this bill, where it came from the Finance Committee. I think a lot of these questions, as we dive in, and I think are again valid and appropriate questions that that a Finance Committee would definitely be focused on.
Representative Newman,
just to comment back on it, Representative Grant, as a former chair of the Finance. They have a lot of bills that stack up in finance, and I think that that's been a large problem in this legislature is making sure we do our committee work in these committees, you know, and that's where we're supposed to be doing these. Finance has got a lot going on right now. I don't think that would be appropriate, quite frankly, Representative Glenn, to send this to finance and ask them to figure it out. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Any other? Rep. Tallarico?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just an observation. You know, we've talked about the assessments quite a bit, and I hear quite a bit about the assessments, and although we've said we're not exactly sure how that's going to work, the term gross revenue seems to pop up quite a bit in the bill, and we've even heard it in testimony and everything. And just from my experience, and I have previous experience being in the tourist industry, all things being equal, gross revenue is not equal because of the geographic locations of all of these different places in the state and everything. So I got to tell you, an assessment, anything built off of gross revenue is I think we're kidding ourselves if we think that there's equal footing right there. I'm sure some of us are from more remote locations than others where, of course, goods and services are quite a bit more expensive. And I'm a little bit troubled with that term because I just can't see that working out very well in an assessment basis with if we're thinking about gross revenue. It's probably an easy one to come up with because you just add it all up at the end of the year. But the expense levels for people to operate within the state of Alaska in different locations, there's an enormous spread there. I know, Mr. Chair, you know that when I go to Home Depot and get a half-inch piece of plywood, when you try and get one home, I'm sure you pay quite a bit for it.
I could go to the scrap yard, but yeah.
Absolutely. So I think those are probably some things that I would appreciate if we get a little bit deeper into that, maybe get better explanations about how we're actually going to do that. I think the assessment process might be a little more complicated than what I'm thinking anyways, because when I hear that term, I just think, well, it's easy enough. You know, you just put it all together and you're good. But I think that might be a tough one. It might require a little better definition on that so that, you know, we it'd be very difficult for somebody if one of these areas was created in a remote location. And, boy, we know there's just huge differences there, or at least I think there are, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Rep. Talbico. So is that a request for more information from the sponsor?
Mr. Chairman, just from wherever we can get it, I think just I think it needs more detail to it. How is that really going to be? It's pretty easy for us to say, well, just this is a language, go out and do it. But when we do that, then people have to follow what it is that we've set forth. So I think we just need to approach that carefully and make sure that we're not putting an enormous burden on somebody who's really trying to do something great in a location that's maybe not, I'll just say, not that economically convenient.
Okay. I'm not sure there is a, I mean, would you like to respond?
Through the Chair, Representative Tallarico, you know, definitely, you know, perhaps after this meeting, we can chat and mm-hmm. see what we're exactly what we're focused on. But yeah, more than happy to dig into that more. It's great. Makes sense.
Ms. Ivey?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, Representative Tallarico through the chair, this definition, in terms of the specific definition used in the I know that's language from elsewhere in statute. I believe our drafter with legislative legal pulled that from the vehicle rental tax statute, if I'm remembering correctly, and adjusted it slightly. But in terms of the concept that you're discussing, I would also just mention, I believe that gross revenues are commonly used in other tourism improvement districts throughout the country. So maybe, perhaps, California, which also has a statewide TID, maybe they have had kind of conversations about this, and John Lambeth is on the line if you wanted to ask him further about their experiences there as well.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it's hard for me to compare other, and I'll refer to them as jurisdictions, with completely different transportation corridors and things like that to what we deal with geographically here, and particularly the distances we travel. And, you know, that, like I say, cost differentials for goods and services are just very broad in Alaska. So and I appreciate Representative Gren, we'll get an opportunity to have a deeper discussion on that. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Thank you.
And if I may, Mr. Chair.
Rep. Josephson had his hand.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think relative to Representative Tallarico's concerns, while I think they're important, I haven't gotten, I mean, in part, legislators rely on communication from people who have a grievance. And we know that the Alyeska Resort has that for its own set of reasons. But I'm not getting a lot of the kind of communication Rep. Tallarico's talking about. And that this is the TID formula is something that's worked in other states. Now, sometimes that's because people are busy and they don't know about the legislation. I guess my concern, although I would support the legislation at this stage, is what Representative Newman noted, just that the Finance Committee would find a solution to the revenue source that DNR and DOT have relied on. And I mean, I go back to the need for a fiscal plan, and then we could probably do that. And I talk about that a lot. But that would be my main concern at this point. Just wanted to share that.
So your main concern is what?
Well, that monies that these two departments have relied on
the
would
vehicle
be
rental tax?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Rep. Tuck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my understanding is there's two reasons why we need to have people's companies' financial records. One of them is for waiting the vote, and the second one is for the amount of the assessment. And is there an appeal process for either one of those? Or, you know, if someone wants to challenge, first of all, then I see another probably appeal process that we may want to have, and that is someone says, hey, I'm not doing anything in the tourism industry. You guys are assessing me. Is there an appeal process for that? And then also, if there's an appeal process for going over the records and saying, well, actually, I should have this many votes, not that many votes.
Representative Tuck through the chair. At this time, there's not an appeal process outlined in the bill. From my recollection, also in the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute statute, there isn't an appeal process in there either, but that would be an interesting conversation to have with the department. I guess the question becomes, as a taxpayer, for example, do we have an appeal on that? There is a termination mechanism in the bill, which is intended to allow industry to come together to decide to terminate or amend an assessment should it not be functioning properly. But I do hear what you're saying about an individual business.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, and maybe these are, I don't know if these are for you guys, but you guys can use your lifelines on anything you need on this. So what about, you know, if someone just starts up their brand new business, they're not profitable for a while, Do they have, first of all, is there a requirement that they be in business for a certain amount of time, or is it just immediately open that they are can be assessed? And then I guess the second question to that is are they will they be able to ever be profitable before they're assessed, or do we look at it that way yet? I'm just thinking about brand new startups. You know, when do they start? When does the assessment start on them?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, I would have to defer to the Department of Revenue for specifics, but in my conversation with them, we did discuss what would happen if a new business came up or came to light even after an assessment was put in place. They would be subject to the assessment as soon as gross revenue revenues were available, is my understanding.
Okay. And if I may, Mr. Chair, using the example that Representative Newman had with a bicycle shop, not a bicycle shop, but somebody renting, but if we had a bicycle shop who at some time decides that they're going to do a bicycle rental, would that fall into, would their whole business be looked at as being assessed or just a portion of it? Do they have to do separate accounting? What would be the requirements of that business?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, I guess I would say that those segment determinations, those definitions, it's outlined in the bill that the transition board would work with the Department of Revenue to determine and identify exactly what those segments include. So what are the goods and services we're looking at? For example, a resort that has restaurants and a ski lift and hotel rooms and, you know, maybe a bicycle rental. Not all of those elements of their business would necessarily be incorporated into a segment that's assessed. So that is basically the industry has said, put that on our shoulders, let us figure that out as a group and come up with definitions and come up with proposed rates per segment. And so this is enabling legislation to allow that conversation to happen.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments from the committee? Brief at ease. Okay, we are back on record. I'll ask the committee if there are any questions or comments one last time. Hearing none, do you want to provide some closing comments, Representative Gren?
Sure, thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, the conversations and the questions that we've had focused today and the previous meetings are greatly appreciated. Obviously, as I previously mentioned, a complex bill that's a new innovative path for our legislator, for the industry to be working towards a solution. It's a heavy lift, and I appreciate people's willingness to dive into something and dig on something like this. To answer some of the questions or, you know, follow up, you know, this is working with an industry, the second largest private sector in our state, working with them to find a solution on something that I believe is vital to our economy, which is tourism marketing. And, you know, this is enabling legislation. This is asking the industry to work with us to find solutions and an assessment that would be passed on to customers. This isn't impacting, you know, businesses directly, but an assessment that moves and uses the monies from tourists to help generate, you know, and the economic engine that is, you know, tourism, the tourism industry in our state. But again, more than happy. You know, I believe our offices have worked with your offices to go through changes, to make improvements. More than happy to continue those conversations, to continue find ways that are to answer questions, to dig into this as much as needed, to continue the real shaping of something that I believe would be revolutionary for our state. So thank you again for the committee's time.
Thank you. So we have a decision point at this time. We either entertain a motion to move the bill from committee or hold it for further discussion. So what's the will of the committee?
If I may, Mr.
Representative Tuck.
So my name is on this bill. I support the idea of this. But I was, as we were going through the operating budget and looking at constitutionality of some amendments on the floor, I was reading through the Constitution, and it's very clear that the legislature cannot give away its taxing authority. Only to municipalities and government subsections or sub-governments. And so I have a few concerns only because I know that we had really good industry support in developing ASME. And ASME works, and ASME has not been challenged in the courts. I fear that if we pass something that isn't as clear and clean and cut as possible, we're opening ourselves up to litigation, to where we will end up jeopardizing ASME and other type of systems like this. So it's not that I think we can do better on getting this thing prepared to prevent any lawsuits that might be heading in our direction. And so I still have a lot of questions, and I'm sorry I can't think of all my questions within 35 minutes or 40 minutes. I really don't. And I don't know if we can get all those answers by then, too. I do want to see, you know, I am concerned about once this gets out there, if it's not packaged properly, that you're going to have a lot of small independent hunting and fishing guides. You're going to have people from all sorts of sectors that are going to be all of a sudden alerted and seeing all these holes, and I don't want to look bad in that. I do want to get this right. I really do. So whatever I can do, and I need to apologize to the bill sponsor that I haven't got a chance to really dive into this as much as I have. I have in the last couple of days, though, and thank you for providing your aid to help me out. I just got to keep going with it. And unfortunately, I got busy yesterday afternoon. But I think I've made it clear to most committee members and you, Mr. Chair, that I do want to get this dialed in a little bit. I don't want to just kick it onto the responsibility on somebody else. I mean, I feel like I have a responsibility as a member of this committee to help it out. So I don't know if we can do another work session where we can kind of like bite down and get into this thing. At this time, I feel uncomfortable about moving it out of committee.
So, without a motion to move the bill, we will hold the bill until next Tuesday. We will also take additional public testimony. There are people who called in to provide testimony today. I'd ask that you try to resolve whatever questions you can over the weekend with the bill sponsor. The bill's been in committee, I think, for 6 weeks now already. We're running out of time in the session. So if this thing is going to be successful and move forward, then we need to act in a pretty rapid manner at this point. So, and with that, we will be adjourned at 12:48 p.m. Thank you.